Welcome back, dear listeners, to the Dish with Dina podcast. Thank you so much for joining us again. My guest today is Chrysler Bailey, a functional medicine health coach and adjunct professor based out of Fort Worth, Texas. Chrysler and I dish about everything from supplements to social media to smart goals. So sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Chrysler Bailey, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so excited to be spending time with you and getting to learn a little bit more about you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making time because I know, like myself, that you are a busy person. And I always like to start these introductions with how did we meet or how do we know each other? And you and I have physically never met, but do you remember when we first crossed paths on the internet?
I know that we have several things in common. So I'm not sure I think it was a professor connection, but I know we have that in common and a love of health and helping people in that arena as well. So I know it was at least one of those things.
It was definitely one of those things. I actually had to go back in time because, like you just said, there's so much stuff that we've crossed paths with on, especially Instagram. I think that's really where we hang out the most together, that I see you and you see me. And I went through some of our earlier direct messages. And I think at the time I was following a hashtag about adjunct professors. And lo and behold, you were on one of those threads or one of those posts that you had that hashtag on it. And so I often say, I don't believe in coincidences. I think this is meant to be that we were in each other's, you know, areas and in each other's views. And I'm just so happy that we've grown and connected with each other on Instagram, because there is definitely a lot that we have in common and so much more that we're going to learn about each other, hopefully, in today's conversation. So yes, it was Instagram. I tend to do a lot of stalking on there. I mean, how much time do you really spend on any one particular social media platform?
You know, Instagram is one that I use probably most. And for sure, I would agree with you that, coincidences are not a thing. There is a reason that you cross paths with people. And I definitely would agree that because we do have so much in common, and over the last probably couple of years, mm-hmm. we've really kind of recognize more things in common or more things that we enjoy or, you know, like to talk about and things like that. So, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And so some of the things I don't think I know about you just yet, but I'm going to find out hopefully over the course of our conversation today, are things in your earlier life. So the reason for this podcast is to get to know a little bit more about where people grew up, some of their cultural upbringings, traditional food ways, family dynamics. So will you share with us some of your earliest food memories? I guess you can also start with, you know, where did you grow up? What was your background like in that respect, whether it was here or elsewhere?
So I am originally from Houston. I lived there until I was just about 10 years old. And then we moved to Florida. And then we moved again right before I started high school to Connecticut. I went to college in New York. After I graduated from college, my first job was in Ohio. And then I moved back to Texas for graduate school. So I have lived in several states. Most people ask me if my parents or parents were in the military. They were not. We just moved where the opportunity took my dad for his work. So I've lived in several different places and enjoyed some more than others. but as far as food memories, I think my food past is something I really have learned a lot about over the past, I would say, 6 years or so. I've really come to recognize certain things. Early on as a kid, my mom cooked meals, but we didn't always eat the healthiest things. I mean, she was a pretty good cook, but she worked a part-time job and a full-time job for most of my childhood. So she was a busy lady. And my dad was very busy and he didn't cook hardly at all. So I ate okay, I guess you could say. But whatever was made by my mom, I had to eat. So there was a lot of sitting at the kitchen table, being very sad because there were Brussels sprouts in front of me that I absolutely hated. but I ate because my mama was serious about cleaning your plate. So that was something that I started to really reflect on and remember as I kind of been through my own personal health journey over the past 6 years. And so now I'm realizing how much that actually did affect me.
We have had this conversation. This is not uncommon. We've had this conversation. I've had this with other podcast guests, and I'm learning about this now too in my own profession, where so many people are part of that clean plate club. And in my family, I'm a first generation Italian American. So I come from two parents who were born overseas, and they have a lot of war stories in their lives, and they were dealing with issues of food insecurity at some point too. So in your case, it was Brussels sprouts. In my case, it was lima beans. I was like, oh my God, no, I don't want any more. And we really did feel like we were being held hostage at that table until we cleaned everything, because, you know, how dare we turn our nose up at foods when there's so many other people on this planet who did not have access to foods. And you are absolutely right that that can affect our relationship with food and how we end up psychologically processing our relationship with foods that are meant to be healthy and nourishing for us, but then they can affect us a little bit negatively down the line. So walk us through that then, because you mentioned in this particular case, 6 years. So what was the turning point that maybe started for you 6 years ago when you started on this personal health journey?
So I have two children. They are, at the time of this recording, they are 11 and 8. With my oldest son, there were many times where he would just fight me on food. And, you know, I always pushed back and was like, you're going to eat this. And, you know, you need to finish what I gave you and all of those things. And, you know, the more that I fought with him, the more I was like, what is going on? Like, why is this happening? I don't want to be fighting with my two-year-old over food. And, you know, it was frustrating at times because it would be things that I knew that he liked. So I didn't really understand like why we were fighting. But just really exploring that and realizing that that's what it was like for me as a kid, that it was always this, if it was something, especially if it was something that I didn't like and I really didn't want to eat it, it was like this standoff with my mom, you know, and she always won, always. I vividly remember sitting at the kitchen table in our house in Houston, and just sitting there and sitting there and sitting there so long that everybody was out of the kitchen. I mean, it had been cleaned up, like I was still sitting there. And I finally was like, you know what? I'm just going to shove all the food in my mouth, run upstairs and spit it out in the toilet and flush the toilet. And I did that. My mom found out, of course, and I got in so much trouble. And I think, you know, I just thought about like my son and him being in that same position, you know, not wanting to eat the food and kind of wanting to skirt the system. And that was like, I was like, no, I don't want him to feel like he needs to be deceptive, that he can't say, you know, that he doesn't want it, or he, you know, if he tells me he's full, I don't believe him. You know, I was like, I don't want that to be our relationship. So, So that was really a big thing for me. And, you know, there were things that, yes, I did kind of stand my ground on with him, but, you know, I just thought this is not how I want to go forward. And I want our time to be together around the dinner table.
Yeah, that is so precious, because you're actually making me a little bit emotional with this too, because you had that wherewithal to have an aha moment for yourself to say, I'm crossing a line, or this is making me have flashbacks of some things, and this is not the future that I see with my son and my relationship with my children. So I should, you know, pick my battles with certain things and make sure that they have a healthy relationship. So can you share a little bit in between that, from when maybe you were starting to become your own adult outside of your parents' home and before maybe you became a mom, as to the journey that you yourself took with learning a little bit more about cooking and eating? Because it sounds like you said, your mom was kind of in charge of putting dinner on the table, but it might not have been something that you might have been in love with. So where did you start learning about your own love of foods and different kinds of flavors and maybe recipes, or even going grocery shopping? Tell us a little bit about that.
You know, that really didn't actually come until I was married, probably. I mean, I, you know, did all the grocery shopping and cooking and whatnot, but I wasn't really in love with cooking. I wasn't a dabbler in foods and tastes. I mean, there were things that I eventually tried, but I really didn't start like getting into cooking and looking at nutrition and understanding how it fuels my body until well after I was married, because at that point I wasn't just feeding myself, I was feeding my husband as well. So and I really wanted to do right by him. So, you know, I grew up very I've always been a very thin person. You know, and I've always been a very active kid. I mean, I was in gymnastics and I was in cheerleading. I ran cross country in high school. You know, I was very active, and I always had somebody telling me how thin I was. Always somebody mm-hmm. was pointing that out. And as I continued to get older, I would just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat some more. Not always because I was hungry. And I didn't realize this until I was much older again, that I wouldn't always eat because I was hungry. I would just eat because I didn't want people to think I didn't eat. And like in college, I mean, I could eat any 300-pound man under the table. Like, give me a whole pizza, I'm going to eat it. I would upsize everything. I would, you know, I would eat and then I would have a second dinner. But a lot of it was because people always pointed out how thin I was. And I would have people say, you know, you need to go eat a cheeseburger, or, you know, things like that. And, you know, even as a grown woman, not that it's okay to say that to a child, but, you know, I'm like, I'm 30 years old and people are still saying these things to me.
Right.
And that really, again, that was something that I started realizing as I kind of started looking at food more and just realizing that's not very healthy, because what I was eating especially was not very healthy. I ate anything and everything because people made me feel like I could. You're thin, so just eat whatever you want. And I did. I ate it all.
We really get no reprieve at whatever end of the spectrum we're on with people making comments on food. So that's a very sensitive situation there too, for you to, you know, kind of you're showing off like, listen, yes, I can eat anything and I'm going to, so you know that I have food, and then realizing, oh my gosh, I'm not making the best choices on this. So if you're anything like me, I ended up with like severe gastrointestinal problems at some point in my life. Did any of this affect your GI, your gut, your skin? Like, when did you start noticing maybe also physical manifestations of some of the choices that you were making?
I didn't have gastrointestinal issues. What I realized was that I had terrible in the, you know, toilet energy.
Right.
And the quality of my sleep was poor. I mean, I would sleep all the time. But I would sleep all the time because I was just so tired and I had no energy during the day. I would literally wake up, like, especially after I had my kids, I would wake up and go through my whole day in my mind and think, when can I stop and take a nap?
Right.
Like that was me waking up in the morning. When can I stop and take a nap? There were so many days where I was so exhausted, I would just cry because I didn't know what else to do and I couldn't do anything else. Like I had to go to work. I had to take care of my son. I had to take my car to get the oil change and, you know, all the things that I had to do. So I would just find myself crying. And I didn't realize at that time, like, why I was so emotional, why my mood was all over the place, why I had no energy. I had no idea, because another thing that I was told, and I think many women are told that are moms especially, is once you have kids, you just won't have energy. Like, you'll just be tired all the time. You'll just be moody. You'll just, you know, never sleep again. And so, you know, for the first few years that I had my oldest son, that's what I thought. I just thought, you know, that's what it was. Not thinking that me, you know, treating myself, quote unquote, you know, the Doritos and red soda four nights a week, or, you know, grabbing that extra large fry multiple nights a week, or, you know, whatever it was. Like, I didn't realize that was linked to everything that I was feeling.
Right. And I think that's something that I'm struggling with a little bit too, because I'm trying to be in the newer generation of registered dietitians where we are trying to embrace a lot of food freedom, food neutrality. You know, we want to make sure we're not forcing people to restrict anything. We're trying to allow pleasurable foods and nourishing foods. So can you speak a little bit about the freedom that can be had? Like, do all foods fit? Is there certain things that you would limit and certain things that you're completely trying to avoid, especially in your own personal journey, but also somehow maybe wrapped into what you're currently doing, if you don't mind going into now the discussion of your health coaching, what you're doing towards there? How does that play together in that respect of your philosophy, your personal experiences, and what you're also trying to encourage others to follow or learn?
So with functional medicine and functional medicine health coaching, everything is very individualized.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things people ask me all the time is, you know, what's your program? You know, how do you work with people? And I'm like, well, I don't have one set cookie cutter way of doing things. I am not going to tell every client to cut out gluten. I'm not going to tell every client to cut out dairy. First of all, that's not what a health coach is to just bark orders and expect people to comply. There's a lot of, you know, kind of what we're doing right now with learning the person's history and what their connections are to food or sleep or their relationships and those types of things. And for me, once I realized my connections, once I realized that I would eat and eat and eat for zero reason, or just because, you know, I felt like I had to, so people wouldn't question it. Once I realized that, I was like, wait a minute, I don't have to eat all the time. And, you know, I did go through a period of time where I cut some things out. My husband and I actually were in a group where we did a detox, a 3-day detox with bone broth. And then we transitioned into the keto eating lifestyle. And we did that for several months. And he lost about 30 pounds and has kept it off pretty much since then. And this was several years ago. I lost 10 pounds and I didn't want to lose weight.
Right.
So, you know, for me, I was like, dag nabbit, you know. Now, it also was beneficial because I realized how much pasta and bread and sugar, you know, and things like that, that we were eating. So I did learn some things about myself and what I did need to change. But I also realized that I just couldn't cut out everything because I didn't want to keep dropping the weight. It wasn't right. healthy for me. So we do eat pasta, but we certainly don't eat it three nights a week like we were before. I do eat bread, but I don't eat it after every single pasta meal like I did before. This week, I've probably had just a couple of slices of bread because I had, you know, a sandwich, and we had tacos tonight. So we did taco boats and we did soft tacos. That's about as much bread as I'm going to have this week. But, you know, some weeks I do have a little bit more because I eat pizza. But I think because I do a lot more eating at home and a lot more cooking, I am really cognizant of what I'm eating, when I'm eating it, how it makes me feel. And I'm okay if, you know, if I have a shake or a donut. I don't do it daily. I don't even do it once a week, you know, but I'm okay with that. And with my clients, I try to walk them through that to help them understand it's okay if you enjoy these foods. Many people do. And let's see if there's a control issue where you feel out of control when you eat them, or let's see if maybe it's something else. Because depending on what it is, then we can address that as the cause and get to the root of the problem versus just saying, well, just don't eat donuts anymore. That tends to push people in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. As I usually do when I'm interviewing people, I'm taking diligent notes behind the scenes here. And certain words are popping up for me because, first of all, I agree with the individualized approach. I realize sometimes it's easier for people to kind of put together a package or a program, but not one size fits all, as we've come to know. And also, just like even the conversation that we're having, we have similarities, but we also have differences, and not everybody's going to be on the same side of the spectrum when they're approaching. And even if they are, there might be different factors that are involved. So one of the things that always comes up, as you mentioned too, were these behaviors. And I'm also, while I'm trying to be compassionate and sensitive to people's lifestyles, I'm also trying to challenge them a little bit to see where, just like you said, where there are issues with control or structure or routine, and how often they prioritize things that are outside of their health versus their health. Because as we know, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup, and those types of adages. And so with the, you know, the way that I think in our country that we've come to know, with a lot of convenience items and we're always on the go, it's a hard thing to try to wrap your head around, like, how do we fix this? How do we start setting boundaries with ourselves and with others? So can you talk a little bit about that for maybe for yourself, and also maybe how you also include that in a discussion with your clients? What might be some of the top key things that you notice popping up that need to be addressed before food even is an issue? Like, what are the things that are triggering people that are causing them to either not get on track, not prioritize their health, not pay attention to things, and focus instead on some of these other quick and easy and more convenient ways of, you know, of eating or foregoing physical activity? So I feel like I'm saying a lot of words. I'll ask you to just kind of, you know, share with us maybe one of the top few things that you notice that are problematic issues that tend to come up as a pattern in the people that you're meeting.
Wow, there's so many. But I would say one of the things is people feel like they have to change, or maybe they want to change a lot of different things. And because of that, that becomes paralyzing because there are so many things. And, you know, I've shared this a lot on my social media about the saying, go big or go home. I think that that has ruined a lot of people. That's something that we say a lot in our culture. But that mentality basically is an all or nothing mentality. And when you have that mentality, if you don't get it all done, or if you don't make all the changes, then you think, well, I'm a failure, or I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to hit that goal weight, you know, those types of things. And that really puts you in a mindset that does not set you up for success. So I think starting small is where is really, really helpful. One of the books that I read during my certification program training was a book called Tiny Habits. And this book really, really, really talks about how starting small and building consistency helps people to experience success that makes them want to continue. So I think that, you know, when I'm working with clients that are really struggling with that all or nothing mentality, I really try to help them definitely see, you know, from the 35,000 foot view, get, you know, we talk about vision and the big goal and things like that. But then we back down from that. We kind of step back and say, okay, what's the first step? What are you going to do today? And so for me, in my health journey, it started about 6 years ago, really, really being intentional. For me, it was supplementation. I started using supplements, and that's really where I actually got hungry for, no pun intended, but hungry for more information, and just learning about supplementation and what that means and how that helps your body and things like that. Somebody wants to start with walking for 5 minutes, then that's okay. Or if they want to start with, you know, adding in one vegetable, you know, added to their meal a week, then that's okay. That's a starting place. That's not necessarily where you stay forever, but let's start small and build consistency so that you can feel that success. You can feel like you're winning, so to speak. And then maybe we add a little bit something more. Maybe you add another vegetable, or maybe you add, you know, some organic seasonings, or, you know, whatever it is. That's another thing too, I think is really important, is the restriction that people think that they have to have in order to be healthy. Healthy is not about restriction. So that's another place, I think, where oftentimes there can be a struggle for people. They don't want to make the change because they think you're going to tell them, well, you just got to stop doing X.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of things that you're saying are resonating with me. And again, I'm writing some things down. So the word of overwhelm, feelings of restriction, the things that they maybe assume have to be changed. And then on the other hand too, in the culture that I believe we live in, where we like immediate gratification, you know, with taking these approaches of setting up these tiny habits, these small but significant changes and steps that we make towards longer, more sustainable goals, can be painstaking for people who are not patient with themselves. And so that's something too, like you have to wrap your head if you're going through any of these wellness journeys, or really anything, you know, that you're setting up for yourself that is sustainable long-term, something that you're investing for yourself in the decades to come, that it's not a 30-day quick fix. It's not something that you're going to have to do that doesn't sound realistic to be able to implement in the long term. It really is about being gentle with yourself, having that compassion, knowing that it's taken you X amount of years to get to this point. It might take you X amount plus 10, you know, to kind of finish or maybe continue that journey. It might be that progress that keeps going. And so to just recognize that change successful and long-term change, I think, does take time. And it, in the sense of that we keep growing and reestablishing, and as seasons change, as life events happen, as we recognize different strategies that work or don't work during certain times of our lives, that we might have to reflect and reconsider, how do I fix this now that this thing has changed in my life, or I have a new career, or there's been an illness or a death in the family, and all of a sudden I feel like those old habits are coming back in again. But I really think it's a hard, for me too, it's a very hard thing to just slow down and be patient with myself. And that can really mess some people up. Like it, you know, they want to see results immediately, but it's like, it's going to take a while to not just unlearn some things, but add more things back in. And like you said, that word restriction, I agree. I often start with, you know, what's missing? What can we add to your plate, your life, your routine, whatever it is, versus taking things away? Like, let's start first building upon stuff that you might be missing from that. Because I do think that's often the case, whether it's, you know, sleep, as we said, that's a very important factor for a lot of people. And that's kind of, at least, well, you know, being a professor, for our students, that's usually the first thing that they sacrifice when they're cramming for exams or they're pulling all-nighters. That's going to affect them long-term if that's a pattern that they have and get used to sacrificing their sleep. So are you missing a quality and quantity good night's sleep? Let's start with something like that. I love these discussions. I feel like I can keep talking to you forever, but I want to be cognizant of the time. So I think if you don't mind sharing with us a little bit about what a current week in the life of you is, because you wear a lot of hats, you have a lot of responsibilities. So tell us a little bit about your current life.
Oh my goodness. Yes, there's a lot. So currently I am a professor and I do teach part-time. I am teaching at a university, you know, local university here in person. So this semester I happen to be teaching 4 classes, which is pretty unusual for an adjunct.
Yes.
Typically adjuncts will teach 1 to 2 classes, possibly 3. But we did have somebody resign right before the semester started. And I am thankful that I am a trusted employee. I'm a trusted teacher. So I was asked to pick up another class. So I teach 3 days a week on campus. So a usual morning is getting up, getting my kids off to school, and then getting myself on to work. Teaching my 4 classes and then coming home and being available for my kids in the afternoon, which I absolutely love. And then also in between those times, a couple of days a week, I spend networking, building my functional medicine health coaching business, coaching clients, and things like that. If I can, you know, get things done around the house as well while my kids are out or something. Certainly once this semester wears on, I will be adding and grading in there somewhere. But yeah, so, and, you know, one of the big things that I do consistently every day is I eat with my family. So that's a big part of my day. We eat at home 6 days a week, and I'm usually cooking a meal. Now, let me just tell you, I'm not a fancy cook. So if those of you out there are thinking, how does she cook? Look, this sister is practical, and I do as simple as possible. So it's very important for me to be able to sit down and have a meal with my family at least once a day. And dinner time is the best time for us to do that. It's something I love and I value and I think is important. So I put my priority there. But also because, you know, eating meals at home is less expensive. It's typically healthier. So that's what my days look like. Weekends are, you know, the normal getting chores done. You know, if I have to grocery shop and things like that, and I can't get them done during the week, that's what I do. But I will tell you, another priority of mine is taking a Sabbath or a day of rest 1 day a week. I am a Christian, and I believe that is not a suggestion. It mm-hmm. is a commandment. And so that is something that also I have had to really learn how to put into my schedule and prioritize. I've done it so much, actually. It's become such a priority that I tell my students the first day of classes, they will not hear from me on a Sunday if they contact me. I don't talk to clients on Sundays. I don't do any sort of business or anything on Sundays. I spend a lot of time in my PJs, watching the Golden Girls or Matlock reruns, hanging with my kids, you know, doing that type of thing. And that has honestly been a game changer for me. So yeah, that's what my week looks like.
Yeah, especially when you do have kind of like an unconventional, non-traditional type of work approach. Like you're working a variety of different things. You're wearing many hats. It's not like you're just clocking in 9 to 5 Monday through Friday and calling it a day. You're really on a lot. And so to allow yourself that one full day of rest where you're unplugged, nothing to do, you know, I have implemented that for, I think, I can't remember, maybe since I was about 20 something years old or so, I've implemented the Sunday day of rest as well. And I also am hard pressed to show up to anybody who's even having a family function, unless it's like an immediate member. And I'm like, okay, I think I can do it on a Sunday. Cause usually that's it. Do not talk to me. I will not answer. Like you said, I will not be on, I'm not checking emails. It's unplugged. And so that's really important too. And I think that's something also that falls away from some people's lives, especially if we are wearing many hats and we're having a side hustle, or, you know, we're doing playing other kinds of roles, or maybe even caregiving, as I've done in the past and I continue doing for our older adults and our families too. Like, we can be spread really thin. And like I said before, and you've mentioned it too, you have to make sure you're checking in on yourself. Otherwise there's going to be nothing left. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the future you and some of the things that you are looking to maybe grow or develop, or what are some of the things that you're planning for in the next, 2 to 5 to 10 years or so?
I think, as far as me, in my teaching life, this is my 21st year of teaching. It's something I never thought I would do, but it's something I've fallen in love with. And so I do believe that I will probably be an adjunct and teach a class, somewhere where they will have me forever. But I do also believe that that is not going to be going forward. That's not going to be my primary mm-hmm. Work life and, my primary income. I'm really looking to spend more time in the health space as a functional medicine health coach. A big place where I really want to spend my time, or I guess a group who I want to spend my time with, is the busy mom. And that may be one-on-one coaching, and continuing that group coaching, doing speaking engagements. I'm all about getting the word out that there is hope and there's help available. And so however I can do that, that's really where I expect to spend most of my work life time.
Oh, that's so lovely. A lot of times when we're going through our training and when we're just getting started in building careers for ourselves, or in our cases, building businesses for ourselves, sometimes we'll just specialize in nothing. We'll just be the general practitioner for everybody that comes our way, just because, for maybe financial purposes, but also to build experience and gain traction and hopefully let the word spread. But I really like that you hone in on a particular population that feels like they resonate with you, and vice versa. You start knowing your strengths and you start knowing there are people that probably seek you out. And mm-hmm. So do you find a lot of engagement on your social media platforms? Obviously I'll be putting your links into the things that people can find you online, but how do you market yourself in these days? Like, what is it that you're doing to reach out and gain clients?
I do online. I Definitely spend a lot of time, as we said earlier, on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I am also doing a YouTube series where I share the stories of people who have used functional medicine in their health journeys. And I think it's really important to share your story and the stories of other people. Because, you know, we can give all the academic information, all the science and whatnot, but, you know, people connect with people. And so I love doing that. You know, and then I do all the professional ones like LinkedIn and, you know, Alignable and things like that. But, you know, I have over the summer, I began networking in person. And as much as I have been in a variety of jobs and spaces and, you know, been around a variety of people, this has actually been a newer challenge for me, but it's really been cool because I've been able to meet a lot of people in business in my local area and, you know, meeting people who work in the community or volunteer in the community and, you know, connecting with medical professionals who are like-minded or medical professionals who are on the fence. They're seeing some things and they have questions. So it's really been something that I've been doing a lot more is connecting with people in person to really get that personal connection. You know, as much as you can talk online about what you're doing and talk to people, it's rare. You and I connected, and I've connected with some other folks through the various mediums. But I think that those in-person conversations, those one-on-ones, those small group conversations really have been very beneficial.
Yeah, Chrysler, this is why I said there's no such thing as coincidence, because I feel like we're living parallel lives when it comes to some of these things. while I haven't fought against the social media, you know, marketing or promotions, because I do believe there's a great way to showcase your personality and just provide a very easy to access outlet for anybody to kind of come by and hang out and see, you know, what services we provide or what our style is. I really believe in that boots on the ground mentality. And thank goodness now that we're kind of coming out of this pandemic and able to reintegrate into the 3D world again, I miss that. I miss hanging out at my local coffee shop. I miss going shopping at, you know, my neighborhood health food store, or I miss engaging with the community center down the street. And so that's actually one of the things that has been on my schedule, my calendar. I've tried to create some time every week or every 2 weeks to just literally take my business cards, walk around the neighborhood and just go, hi, I've never introduced myself to you. I've been here for 20 years and please let me know if I could ever be of service to you or if there's any brainstorming or partnerships that we can come up with. You know, I'd really love to get reintegrated into the neighborhood because I just feel like I've been so detached for so long, whether it's been because I went back to school or I was working at a job that had me, you know, there for like 60, 70 hours a week. And so now I just feel like we're getting back to the roots of things. So there is, just like you mentioned before, with the at-home cooking, spending time with your family, that social connection is so, so important. And we recently, in class and some other places, we were talking about that research done on the blue zones of the world, which are like the five different areas across the globe that are where people live the longest, like longevity is a factor. And one of the things, aside from, you know, health, nutrition and physical activity and those types of things that they're following, is the sense of community. And that's really what I think you're getting at there is like those, what you said, the like-minded professionals, the in-person partnerships and networking, putting a face to a name and not just adding another email to an already overflowing inbox is such a great way to have a connection. And when people get to know your personality in that sense, in that way, not just through online social media, I think it really resonates with, especially in local settings where you become the go-to person. So I'm so excited to see where that leads you and me too. Like, I'm really happy that we're both putting efforts into that. So without further ado, as I'm wrapping up our conversation here, Hugh, do you want to share a little bit about where people can find you? You mentioned Instagram. Do you have a handle that people can go to? Is there something that you're creating there, or should I just send them to your website?
Yeah. So on Instagram, I actually have two different accounts. I have my coaching and kind of health and wellness side. So I am at Coach Chrysler, and it's K-R-I-S-L-E-R. And if you want to follow my silly professor life, I'm Professor Chrysler. So either one of those, you can follow me there. And then also, I have, as I mentioned, I have a YouTube channel. It's Health Coaching with Chrysler. And my YouTube series is called Coach Chrysler's Convos. And you can check that out. I would love for you guys to see some of the folks that I chat with there. I have had conversations with MDs, naturopaths, nurse practitioners, travel agents, you know, regular folks like me, a celebrity chef, an author. So, yeah. And they're just really fun conversations. So if you want to check that out, I'd love it.
Yeah. You have a mix of things on here that are like both integrated from the shorts and the reels and that sort of thing that a lot of us are able to now upload to YouTube. And then you have full length conversations. I actually skimmed through a few of these in preparation for our discussion where, like you said, they have individual experiences that they're sharing. And this is also why it's so important for people to, I think, be exposed to a variety of different things of what works, what doesn't work, because the body is so complex and unique. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is going to be able to do the same thing that like their brother-in-law did, or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat to see what other people are sharing. And especially since you do have so many people from across different professions and categories, I think that's very cool to watch those discussions. So I'm glad that they exist out there. And last but not least, I have my two corny / food related questions as I wrap up my interviews. And they are, what is on your plate today in relationship to, as we are finishing our discussion, what's the next thing that you're doing in preparation for your day or the next day? And then what's on your plate today, as in what's the next meal that you'll be eating?
Ah, good question. So as far as what I will be doing for the rest of the day, I actually have a pretty consistent nighttime routine. So that typically consists of a hot bath with while listening to a podcast. Tonight's podcast choice is probably going to be the latest episode of Murder, Mystery, and Makeup by Bailey Sarian. I enjoy that one as well as her Dark History podcast, but I have several podcasts that I will kind of shuffle through each night. So yeah, so a hot bath with Epsom salt and as clean as possible, bubble bath and podcast, and then I will settle into bed. I will not have my phone next to my bed. That's another thing that I do consistently at night. It stays in my office so that I can relax and maybe watch a little TV with the lights off, and then I will drift off to Betty Bye and get me some good night's sleep tonight.
I love the routine. And so that means you won't be eating tonight, but do you already know what you're going to eat tomorrow? Do you have like a regular breakfast routine or first meal of the day that you do?
Yes, I don't. I actually am an intermittent faster, so I don't eat my first meal is not your traditional breakfast time. My first meal is usually after my first two classes. I teach in the morning. So I will eat probably around 11. That'll be my first meal. And, you know, typically I take my lunch to work. I don't buy lunch out. So it's usually leftovers. And we don't have any leftover taco shells, so I can't take that for lunch. So I'll have to see what is left in the fridge. Maybe I'll whip myself up a nice salad and take that, or make myself a good thick sandwich and take that. I usually just see what's in the fridge, what's left over, and I make myself a little something. I pack it in my Wonder Woman lunchbox and off I go for the day.
I love that. I do that thing too, where I just put my head in the fridge, pull out a whole bunch of stuff, like, a large tablespoon of everything that's left. And sometimes it's the most random combinations of things like olives and tofu and whatever else is going on in there. And that's the fun thing that I try to get across to a lot of people, just like you mentioned. And I use the word breakfast, but then if you heard, I switched it up and I said the first meal of the day. Not everybody has to just think of like, oh, cereal out of the box. I often say, think outside the cereal box when it comes to your first meal. It doesn't have to be the traditional American type of food. It could be last night's salmon. It could be, something else that you're whipping up that you enjoy eating. Food is there to nourish you in some way. And so whatever it is that you like, it doesn't have to be something that looks pretty or smells good, but it's just something that you enjoy eating. So try not to put too much thought in it other than this is the food that nourishes me. This is the stuff that I can afford. This is what it's accessible. And hopefully it has components of, as we were talking before, balance and diversity, lots of different colors, hopefully in it, and that you're not being force-fed to eat anything that you don't like to eat at your kitchen table like Chrysler and I were when we were younger.
Yes.
So my dear, it's been a true pleasure spending the better part of an hour with you, getting to know you a little bit better. I really hope that our listeners took away a lot of great takeaways as I did. As I mentioned, I will be linking to a variety of things related to you, but I'm also going to put in some of the notes here. I looked up the Tiny Habits book. I also looked up that Murder, Mystery, and Makeup podcast. So I might link to those too in case anybody's interested in checking those out as well. So on that note, have a wonderful rest of the day. Enjoy your lovely bath and your bedtime routine. And I will definitely see you again on Instagram, my friend.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. This was great.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina. And I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.